In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffy Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Bond hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 44. And one thing we're going to try to do a lot more moving forward, especially now that we've joined the Odyssey family, is because we have credibility now to get some guests. But this one was an easy get, no offense. Turns out the producer of the shows that I work on at WTIC in Connecticut is a huge Yankee fan. And he's a lot like you, John, that he's just like, to me, like anyone who wears the shirts and the hats with any regularity has to have something hardcore going. Like there's the fan who wears the shirts and the hats to games or the shirts and the hats, you know, on a special occasion. But if you have at least, okay, let's say my over under, if you have at least three pieces of clothing that are your team, you're probably hardcore.
So what is your, about like 33?
You got, okay, do you think?
I get joked on all the time, like if I'm not wearing Yankee stuff.
So you have,
like there's most people like wouldn't know this shirt, Savages with the box.
That's a Yankee shirt?
You're a Yankees fan or a baseball fan, right?
Right.
So, but I could wear this around and some people won't get it.
Right.
Right. But no, usually I always
like a couple dozen. You have like literally.
Oh, at least. Yeah. I'll count them for the next episode how many I got.
So his name is Matt Sorois. And where are you on that? Items of clothing.
I have about close to 30 pieces of clothing.
Yeah.
Whether it be hats or pieces of clothing or.
See, I didn't have like hats. Like I only own one like real Yankee hat and it's like their World Series hat.
You mean like, official hat that's not adjustable, you mean?
Yeah, I only own one of those. I have a bunch of like, you know, like the trucker hats and stuff, but usually those are bought for me. Like my wife buys them for me. Like I don't go out and buy like Yankee hats. I usually just buy like
shirts.
So you
have like, let me just repeat this. So you have like 30 items that are legitimately in your rotation?
Yeah.
Like what's, I mean, because like, I only have like one or two in my rotation.
I have probably like, 8 to 10 I go to all the time. You know, I have a Phil Hughes T-shirt with a name on the back. And the only reason I got
is
that
is at the bottom of the drawer when everything else is dirty.
But I got that because you couldn't find those. Like you couldn't find Phil Hughes, and I liked him. Right, like Phil Hughes was a good pitcher for the Yankees for a little while. Right,
Phil Hughes, thanks you for that.
Yeah, while he's opening baseball cards.
We had a thing for a while. As soon as somebody got traded or free agent signed with someone else, their shirts went down to $5. Like I have a Rocco Baldelli. You know, like
I don't have a Johnny Damon. I don't have a Jacoby Ellsbury.
Of course not.
I don't have a Pavano. So I can at least say that. So I guess the lowest tier I've got is Phil Hughes. And I don't really consider that a low tier.
Listen, all right, so Matt, just quickly before, we want you to chime in on all the subjects. So just don't wait.
I'm nervous, but no. I'm good.
I want to know, do you have a tattoo, a Yankee tattoo?
I do have a Yankee tattoo.
All right, so now that is hardcore, right?
Let me see it.
What does it say?
I have the core four numbers on it. And
so that's Pettit, Posada, Jeter, and Mariano.
See, I like that.
That's right.
Wow. It's so funny. I hadn't even noticed it. I mean, I'm better with that than I am with the Phantom of the Opera. But we won't talk
so
about
Matt.
Matt's
who is your
part.
Favorite player in the Yankees? Like
currently?
Forever.
I really, really loved Nick Swisher when he was on the Yankees.
Yep.
It's a fan favorite. He was just looking like a little leaguer out there having fun.
Right, because you just want to play hard and then go out with him and get hammered.
Yeah, he was also like an attitude you'd like to see on the Yankees. He was a good Yankee, but he was like that different Yankee.
Right,
he wasn't like your total business Yankee, but when you looked at him, you didn't look at the guy like, oh, we don't want him on the team. Like,
and I love, you know, it's hard not to love Derek Jeter as a Yankee fan. I love listening now even to former interviews he's done where Brandon Steiner has asked him like, you know, what about like making it to the World Series? And he's like, you didn't win the World Series. He's like, why am I going to be happy with that?
Right.
He's like, it's about winning. He's like, and if you're not winning, it's miserable. And I'm miserable.
I just found him so dry.
And he also said he would play until it wasn't fun anymore. Right. And then he just walked away, which I think, you know, when he retired, it did surprise a lot of our fans.
Well, he could have played. He wasn't at the top of his game. The only thing I think that he did great as a Red Sox fan is that he didn't get married as a ball player because he went on half. Like, the dumbest thing, I think, is to, you know, to do that. And so he was just smart about
it. He did everything right as a ball player.
He really did. But that's the thing about me. That my only, I mean, I respect him. You can't not respect him. But he just was too cute and too perfect. I wanted something edgy about him.
I'm telling you, man, it's a typical Red Sox bias.
A scandal.
I needed something.
He can't even like Derek Jeter.
I need some like F bomb, you know, when on a kid's show or something. Like something. I just something to show the.
So
wasn't
now that
perfect.
Now that Aaron Judge has fixed the gap in his teeth, can we like him?
No. No, he reminds me of the guy like in the Bugs Bunny cartoon. It's just like this, the bat is like a toothpick. And I want to take a step back because we have a ton of baseball to talk about. Just Matt, just talk about, you know, John talked about his family as his background for his Yankee fandom and going to the park when he was young and this and that. Where does it come from for you?
Honestly, growing up, my grandparents were huge into the Red Sox, and I kind of wanted to be a little badass and go against the grain and say, no, I'm not going with the Red Sox. They tried to buy me like a Mo Vaughn jersey. I was like, I don't want that. I was like, I don't want that jersey.
You chose it.
I chose to be a Yankee fan, yeah. And I guess it was maybe influenced because the rivalry was, you know, a little bit heated back then, like in the early 90s too still. But yeah, I liked them ever since I was like 6 years old back in like 93.
So this is John. This is John's great question. When did you become a super fan?
A super fan.
Is there a moment like did you remember that like you just went in deep after that?
I mean, the '96 season was huge for me as a kid watching. You know, the '96 team was just massive. I mean,
that was a big changing point for a lot of Yankee fans of like our general generation because they stunk so bad in the '80s and into the early '90s. Like, this was the beginning of the Yankees' so-called dynasty. Right. Was '96.
And you were like 22. You were like
21. Yeah.
Even like in '94, '95, I remember watching Don Mattingly play and everything, and just thinking he was like the best thing in the world at first base, like. Look at this guy with his mustache, just the swag dripping off of him and everything, you know?
Now, did you get pushback from your grandparents or other members of your family?
Oh, yeah. They always tried to switch me over, 100%. They always tried to switch. No, it's okay. Come on. Here's the Mo Vaughn jersey again. I'm like, no, I'm all set. Thanks.
I love the intra-family rivalry. That's kind of cool.
See, we're like lucky to that effect. We do not have that. Like, literally everybody in my family that are Yankee fans. Now, there's not a lot of us
that's
left.
Lucky. I kind of think it'd be fun if one of your sons was gung-ho Boston. I think that'd be hysterical.
Yeah, it'd be interesting in my family. I don't know how it would work in the cynical household.
I can see your two sons. I can see your two sons going to blows over it, probably.
Yeah, the same kids that I just took their PS4 away from because they were fighting this morning. Like, literally right before I got here. So.
Yeah, but the younger one can't beat up the older one, can he?
No, but he thinks he can. I mean, the older one is a lot stronger than he looks for his size, but the little one is, you know, he's got an attitude.
See, my older one is not only not as big and strong, but my older one's not as tough. So the little one bloodied him once, and now everyone's scared.
He's
scared. Everyone's scared that he's going to try to stand up to him and get really hurt. Yeah. So he doesn't even try anymore.
He's an enforcer.
Listen, he's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. We're here with Matt Sorois here on episode 44 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Let's get in quickly to the teams because it's pretty unbelievable. If you look at some of the past episodes and look at the titles of the show, you realize what kind of season it's been. The Yankees, obviously, whether the streak is on or off, I mean, they've played great ball. I mean, John, I know you. There's a couple things you want to point to, and then I'd like to get your take, Matt.
Well, I mean, what else can you say? I mean, they're clicking on all cylinders. It's unbelievable. I mean, I think, honestly, the addition of the Bronx kid, remember we talked about Andrew Velasquez, talking about him. He has been a great spark to this team. And then, again, Aaron Judge. Rolling along, but like, you know, Matt, you and I had talked about this before the show started. You know, we're a little nervous in a way because the Yankees have a lot of good problems ahead of them, and they got to make some big decisions coming up here.
A lot of good problems here. Right.
What are they? Let's go through it.
Gleyber Torres coming back. Like, what do you do with the kid Andrew Velasquez? You send him back down. You maybe put him on the bench, alternate him, or whatever. I mean, you know, the 40 man roster is about to kick in.
No, there's no 40-man roster this year, right? I think it's
no.
It's,
I think they just they just go with the normal roster, or they add one. I'm
I think
not
it's
sure.
like 26. Oh, really? Yeah, there's no. I think I got rid of the 40-man, so there's an even bigger decision.
You also have, you have Kluber coming back too, but he'll be easier to slot in. But it's tough with Luis Gil pitching so good. He just keeps he's sticking down in the minors. You know, Tyon didn't have a good last start, but you know, again, the big question is, you know, what do you do when Torres comes back? And he's not far from coming back. You know, there's going to be an odd man out on this team, whether it be Brett Gardner, Tyler Wade, the Bronx kid. I mean, it's I don't know. Who do you think? Do you have any opinion on this? Who would you get rid of? Someone's got to go.
It is tough. It's tough to say.
Do they drop a pitcher? I don't think they're going to. They can't drop a pitcher.
I don't think they could drop a pitcher at all. No, I think they need depth in the bullpen, and you know, have to go with the sixth starter even and maybe throw that guy in the bullpen.
So there's a position player that's going to be the odd man out if and when Gleyber Torres comes back. Now listen, he's swinging the bat. He did a rehab assignment. There's no guarantees yet on how he's going to respond, right? And we don't really know the extent of his injury. He had a sprained thumb, they say. So if and when he does come back, somebody's got to go.
All right, so listen, but my whole thing is getting back to you know, and I know that, you know, Rizzo hasn't played that great, and if he gets hot, it's even better for them. And but, you know, I go back to the closers. I mean, both the Red Sox and Yankees have had, listen, Matt Barnes and Aroldis Chapman had a little bit of success late in the week, but I still look at it as a red flag. And so if you're Aaron Judge, if you're in a wild card game and you're up one run in the ninth, this is a straight out question. You're in a one game playoff and you're up a run in the ninth. What are you doing? Because you know what? You can put a guy, you can say, oh, we'll put him out there. And if he puts a guy on, you yank him. But then he puts a guy on, the game's already in jeopardy.
Well, you have to face three batters. So if you come into the game, you have to face three batters.
So what do you do?
You also have to ask yourself who's available, right?
No, everybody's available.
Everybody's available. So you got Green, Peralta, Loaisiga, and Chapman. Yeah. There's your top four for the Yankees, right?
Sure. That's you could even bring back Mariano from the luxury
Ghost of Mariano. I mean, I wish I could have the Ghost of Mariano.
And like so what do? It's simple.
You have to go with the hot hand at this point. You have to.
So whoever's pitching well,
the best is going in.
That's a diplomatic cop-out.
If the season ended today, yes, I would go with Jonathan Loaisiga. He's pitched amazing. To me, he pitches 100 miles an hour. He's everything that Chapman is, but consistent.
John?
All right, I'm going to talk about the last 10 appearances for these guys, right? Because I looked this up, because we're going to talk closers, right?
As of Friday.
Chad Green, 13 innings, 11 hits, 3 earned runs, 17 Ks. Wandy Peralta, 11 and 2/3, 10 hits, 1 earned run, 9 Ks. Loaisiga, 13 and 2/3, basically what Green, 10 hits, same as Green, 1 earned run, 13 Ks. Chapman, 9.1, 7 hits, 2 earned runs, 14 Ks. Now, if you look at those numbers, they're all pretty close.
Yeah,
they're not bad.
Similar.
You know, so I'm thinking, you know, Loaisiga, what you said is a great pick. I mean, I have no problem with Loaisiga going in. But you look at what Loaisiga and Green, and it's like you look at that span of 10 games. There's always that one game where you look at them, you're like, oh my God, they can't be our closer again. Right?
That guy throws that hard, but Loaisiga throws that hard.
Yeah.
He reaches 100.
He's like Guidry, man.
Yeah.
He doesn't even that big.
He throws very hard. He throws 100, 101.
The thing I like about Loaisiga, too, is that he can go in the eighth and ninth.
Yeah, and Loaisiga has the experience, right? Listen, you know, Loaisiga's been on the Yankees now. I believe this is his third year.
Yeah.
You know, so he understands New York. You know, I have confidence in Loaisiga. I have no problem with that, but I'm going to stick with you got to go with the hot hand because all four of them, granted, Chapman has looked like a disaster, but he hasn't really pitched that bad.
His Ks per nine, some of his stats are still really impressive.
Yeah.
And it's almost
like he just got stupid at one point in his last outing.
Because I'm pretty, you know, indifferent about the team. I don't know much about the backgrounds. To get into the bigs out of Nicaragua, he's a 5'11" relief pitcher out of Nicaragua.
Who's this?
Loaisiga.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, like, you have to go through a lot of stuff in your life. I mean, forget about, like, Colombia or Venezuela, you know.
Even Cuba is easy now.
I mean, that's just pretty incredible. I know you guys.
Gone are the days of El Duque coming over on the raft.
That's true.
First class ticket.
I know you guys don't give a crap about Matt Barnes, but I actually think that the Red Sox problem is kind of worse. I mean, I think they'd like to put in Garrett Whitlock, but they want to groom him as a starter and sort of slot him in there. I think puts him back. They like to put him in when he can pitch at least two innings or whatever. So I know I see your eyes gloss over, so I'm not going to touch on it.
I think what you're talking about is a huge deal for the Red Sox. I mean, the pitching in general is a big deal. When you look at the three teams, the Yankees, Red Sox, and Rays, that's what it's really come down to is the pitching. The Rays and the Yankees are pretty equal when it comes to pitching across the board. And then you look at the Red Sox, and they've given up almost 100 more runs, and they've walked more batters.
Yeah,
I mean, it just comes down to this, and hopefully Sale can right that ship. But listen, look, Sale's one has three starts.
Yeah, he's 3-0.
He probably will have 10 starts.
But he's played nobody.
Total.
He purposely held him out against the Yankees and against the Rays. He hasn't pitched against anybody.
Right, but my point is Sale's going to need to win all his starts for the Red Sox.
Correct.
Or put them in a position to win those games. We either have to come away with a W or give them what they need. And he has done that so far, right? Granted, I don't care who he's played, right? He has not looked bad. He just threw an immaculate inning.
Yeah.
His third one in history.
I know.
Right? So Chris Sale knows how to pitch, right? Chris Sale's going to go out there and do what he has to do.
So one game, I'm assuming, because we got to move on. I'm assuming the Red Sox and Yankees are playing in the wild card game. Correct?
I mean, very well. I mean.
Okay, so you think Sale gets to start over Evaldi, right?
Absolutely. As long as he's healthy.
And it's against Garrett Cole.
Right? This could be me being biased Yankee fan, hopeful. But I still think that the Yankees have a chance to win the division.
I do, too. That's what I was about to say, and you kept. I honestly think they do because they're going to finish out against Tampa at the end of the season as long as they keep hanging in there and keep playing. Listen, Tampa is 8-2 over their last 10 games, right? The Yankees, we all know what they're doing with their streak.
Okay,
right?
Friday. They're only four out. I'll grant you that, Matt. I'll grant you that. But let's just segue into that. We'll skip a couple line items, and we'll go back to it. I was just toying around with their Tampa stats and stuff. Let's talk about, because my question on our little fake rundown that I chicken scratch on my notepad, how do you explain Tampa? And I can't. I mean, the only player who has an average on their roster above 300 is Drew Rasmussen.
He's a pitcher.
Correct. He's 1-for-3.
They got him in the Willie Adames trade.
My point is that they don't have a regular player,
no player
above 274.
Rosarena.
And you know who that is? It's Wander Franco, the rookie.
And that's the reason why they're playing so good. Right now.
I'm just saying they got nobody.
They got him, and they got Rosarena, and they got Wendell. I mean, Wendell's not driving in a lot of runs, but his average is up there.
Yeah, it's 2-7, my point, like, but somehow, whether it's the way they cobble that pitching staff and the way they use them, I mean, it's amazing.
Look at what they did, all right? So they traded Rich Hill, they got rid of him, they got rid of Adames, they got rid of Diego Castillo. Right, those three players. Like, Rich Hill was just traded at the deadline, right? He was looking pretty good, right? He goes to the Mets, he's like, they know what's going on. If one thing that the Rays can do is recycle pitchers.
Sure, I look at their numbers, great. And I'm just like, how are they winning so many games? And then you see they're hitting, and they don't have a single regular position player hitting over 270.
Their pitching is good, and they lost Tyler Glasnow, and what they do is they just keep, they get these guys when they're young. And they don't hold on to him. They got rid of Blake
Snell. But that doesn't explain to me why they're winning and in first place. Like, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I point back to Wander Franco. Ever since they've been playing good all year. But with Wander Franco, when they got him, I think, again, it drives some youth into the team. They see that this kid can hang with all of them. He is a freak. He's like Juan Soto. He's like Tatis. He's a player that even when he's young, that this team can rally around. Listen, everyone said on that team that they were heartbroken when Willie Adames left. I don't really think they care about Willie Adames leaving anymore. Like, I think they got over that real quick, right? The Rays don't have players that are on that team long. They have two players on that team with a longer than a one-year contract.
Yeah.
Right? Brandon Lau is up in 2024, and Kiermaier was up after next year. And Kiermaier, like I said, up next year, he signed a while ago. Everybody else is a one-year deal. They don't hang on to their players. They get them while they're hot, and then they get rid of them.
It's crazy. I mean, I'm extremely, and I know the Red Sox are trying to recreate a lot of it. So I look at their roster, and I'm like, I don't understand. But they do. They play tough, and they manage pretty well. All right. John Senecal, Brian Shackman here. Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports with our guest Matt Sorois today. I want to bring up a couple things because early in the week, Alex Verdugo, who I like a lot, he stopped in the box after a long hit as if he hit a home run. And then he realized that it wasn't a home run. And then he tried to stretch it into a double, realized he wasn't going to make it to second. So he tried to get back to first and got thrown out at first. And like, I like him, I do, but I think that to me that symbolizes everything that's wrong with the stupid bat flip.
Did he start the next game?
He did.
He stayed in that game, obviously.
I think so.
All right. Should he have been pulled?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing with Cora. Like, he finds a way to be firm, but he's also a player's guy. Like, he doesn't show them up, but he holds them accountable.
But given,
like,
the circumstances.
Which is your point, is you'd have benched him.
Well, given the circumstances and the state of the team, right? That's the last kind of message you want to send, especially from a guy like Alex Verdugo, who I would not expect that from, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was disappointed.
That would drive me nuts as a manager.
Anyone
would you bench
general,
him? Would you
anyone.
Bench him? Would you bench him?
For a game, yeah. Why not? Absolutely. Or maybe just pull him out for the rest of the game.
I feel like people are so, the managers are so hesitant. That's why all these ex-players are getting these managing jobs, because they want the players to be happy.
You got
to
ask yourself, like, what was he thinking in that situation?
He thought he had a home run.
All right, so I wasn't watching the game, obviously. So what was the situation in the game?
Oh, God, I have to go back to it.
I mean, is it a close situation?
Yeah, the game was in the balance.
Okay, so you're running away with the game. I mean, I think regardless, you got to at least leg it out, right? You got to start running. Aaron Judge gets around the bases in like 19 seconds in his home runs, you know?
I'll tell you what, I remember years ago, not years, years ago, but enough years ago, where Robinson Cano would just drive me up a wall.
Loafing.
Every single time he'd like bounce out, you know, I've seen it a couple times with him, I can remember, where the shortstop would bobble the ball and he could have easily made it to first, but he was just moseying his way down the first and he got called out.
We saw that in the Yankee series, just a ground ball to Odor and Ozzie Albies is busting it out of the box and he beats it out, right?
Yep.
That's the one thing that Derek Jeter always did, and that's why, again, another reason to love him. Dude, that guy never gave up.
Yeah.
He always went 110%.
So they were down 4-0 in the fourth and they needed a rally. And
he,
if he had
down
run
4-0,
yeah, and if they
I thought they were up,
no,
oh please,
and
dude,
if they,
bench the guy,
and if he had run, he would have had a stand up double.
All right, so listen, the other night, the longest game of the season was played, right? 16 innings, the Padres and the Dodgers. All right, Tatis ties the game in the 15th, in the top of the 15th. All right, did anybody see that?
I did not.
Did you see where his home run landed? Literally like 6 inches over the guy who jumped in right field to catch it, and he was still standing in the box when the ball went out. All right. Now, I give you the fact that, like, these guys know when they hit the ball out, but that ball was almost caught by the outfielder, right? In a 15th inning while you're down 3 runs.
Yeah, to me, that's, and I love Tatis, but that's hot garbage as far as I'm concerned. Matt, you got a hot take on this whole
pimping
home run crap?
I don't mind the bat flip, you know, when you know it's absolutely gone, and if it's like a game winner like that, if you absolutely know it's gone. You know, if you're a left-handed batter at Yankee Stadium, and you know when you jerk it out, it's
like you know when a guy hits a home run when it is gone.
Like I love Rougned Odor, but when he hits a homer and he knows it, he just flips the bat, drops it, and like
tips his hat
and like starts running. I love that.
Yeah, I like celebrations. I just, you know, like when it. You better be sure it's going to look really bad. And I like Verdugo, and I'm going to actually segue into one more subject before we get to our nugget of the week, courtesy of John Senecal. Is I went to the game, the Rangers game, Monday with my son, and we sat in left field right by the edge of the wall. There was nobody there. We could do anything. It was one of those days where it's so quiet you could actually get the players' attention.
Yep.
And it was great because, I mean, all my son wanted was a ball, and Verdugo would totally interact. Like, he tried to throw it to a fan, and it fell short, and it fell on the field. And then I yelled, E7, he laughed. You know what I mean? Like, it was funny. Like, yeah. And he was doing it back and forth. But what bugged me is that there was a guy who I've known in those seats for years. I won't mention his name. He was heckling, but it was not funny. Like, it wasn't mean. He was trying to like, but like, there's nothing to me more cringeworthy than someone who thinks they're funny,
right?
Constantly heckling, and they're not funny.
And everyone can hear you.
And it was not, and like to me, I was like, shut up, because like.
Can you give us anything? What do you have? Anything good?
I was like, how much for the glasses? I'll give you $50 for the glasses. And then like, you know, and like, and then.
Like his he's like the glasses he's wearing?
Yeah.
Like the outfielder?
Yeah. And he's like, hey, I'll start up a hitting clinic and you'll be my first client. I think I can help you. Like stupid stuff.
Man.
Like not funny. But I felt like anybody could understand.
The whole game?
relentless. We moved our seats because I'm like, this guy's not going to want to look in our direction to throw a ball.
You have to move your seat.
And he's a nice guy. This guy's actually a nice guy, but like he thought he was funny and he was yucking it up in front of his friends as he was, you know, obviously drinking like 14 beers. But
it was like what was it, Vacation, when Chevy Chase goes in and he's ordering the drinks from the saloon. He's like, oh, you rascal, belly, belly. And he blew. Oh, it's all an act.
But this is my point is that if you're going to do it, and I like saying something. Like every day, opening day, my goal is to get a little, at least a glove, little flap from the guy, and I, you know, scream like, hey, you know, welcome to Boston or whatever. Like, I like talking to him, but I just think my point is if you're going to try to be funny, you better flip and be funny, because it just was, it made the game experience actually worse.
Yeah. So you saying this reminded me of a time, like a long time ago, the Albany Colony Yankees used to play in Albany, New York. They were the AA Yankees, which I could go a whole other episode on all the players
you should do that
I met there. Including Bobby Dickerson. But so after they left, there was like a semi-pro team that came in there. And we're talking like small stadium, like high school stadium almost, with glorified metal bleachers. And my buddy and I went to a game there, and we sat right behind home plate. Now, when I say right behind home plate, like where I'm sitting now and where you are is like the dirt on the field.
Right.
Like everybody can hear you at these things, right? So we were there. We had a few drinks. And I think we were like, you know, we maybe in college or just out of college. And it was so bad that the play was so bad that the pitcher, every time he would walk somebody and the guy would get on base and they would steal. To the point where the pitcher, like he would be in, is not even to come set. He would just start to move and my buddy and I would go, he's going! The guy would steal. Like, the catcher would throw the ball back to the pitcher. We got so bad to the point where like the umpire like turned around and looked at us and was like, all right, guys, enough. Like, enough.
Because like you looking outside at yourself would have been like, shut up.
Yeah, shut up. But me, you know, like 20-something-year-old me after a few drinks, like i.e. that guy, but still, yeah. Same kind of thing. But just to say, like, you know, what you can and can't hear. Yeah. And now we've seen it with the COVID and stuff. These guys can hear a lot more. And even the games now, that you can see the attendance is down at a lot of these parks, yeah, too. Especially like you game, you said, during the day.
Well, that was a day after a rainout, so there was nothing. I mean, there was probably 17,000 people, tops, I think. All right, so listen, any final thoughts on anything, Matt?
Before I will tell you one thing about Fenway, though. I remember Travis Shaw hit that grand slam in that walk-off.
I was there.
And he said there was like 17,000 people there. And the thing about Fenway, it still sounds like 40,000 people.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, I will say this, and I don't usually say this about Fenway fans in the summer because usually a lot of tourists. The crowd was good. And it reminds me when I dated Rico Bronya's sister in the 90s, we used to go to Shea when it was like 14,000.
Yep.
But if things got going, that place was rocking. And if you went up to the upper deck where it was all Latin population was up there. They were dancing and like having a party. Blast. Yep. I mean, like, so it was the type of thing. You're right. It doesn't have to be a big crowd to be a good crowd. And they were going nuts. All right, John, what do you got for us? Nugget of the week.
All right, nugget of the week. We're going to talk.
You can sponsor it, by the way, if you want to sponsor it.
All right, well, for now, we'll call it Nugget of the Week. And we're going to talk Little League World Series because it's timely, right? Little League World Series are going to have the big, just United States teams in it this year. And they're going to be playing that this coming weekend. So the big talk in this Little League World Series is a kid named Gavin Weir out of South Dakota, and he's thrown a no-hitter, and so far in Little League World Series, 16.2 innings, no hits, 2 walks, 45 Ks, and he's thrown 2 no-hitters.
Wow.
In Little League World Series. No perfect game yet, right? In his tournament, he's in all the Little League tournament, you know, all-stars, districts, all that stuff, 43 and two-thirds innings, 1 hit, no runs, 114 Ks, 6 walks, and he's thrown 4 no-hitters total.
Oh, my.
That's insane.
Insane. And, if you watch him pitch, he's a lefty. They compare him to Chris Sale, Red Sox reference. Prior to this appearance in the Little League tournament, South Dakota had been 1-11 in prior Little League World Series play, and now they have a legit shot of winning the whole thing. So that being said, it got me thinking. Got me thinking back to another big lefty in the Little League World Series, out of New York in the Ronnie Polino All-Stars, Danny Almonte.
Who wasn't 12.
Like, some people thought he was 17. Some people thought he was 16. He turns out he was 14. Now, I want to talk about his numbers, right?
5 o'clock shadow. That
exactly. By the way, this kid does look like Chris Sale. He looks like a mini Chris Sale. His stuff.
So Danny Almonte, 18 innings pitched. He pitched 3 games in the Little League World Series. 18 innings pitched. Now, there's debate from what I've read if he had 62 Ks or 46 Ks. I'll go with the 62 because I read that more.
Because it's more impressive.
Yeah. 18 innings pitch, 62 Ks, 3 hits, 1 unearned run. Okay.
So this guy's better. This guy's better.
Weir's better. He's better. In my opinion, he's better.
Did Almonte win the whole thing?
No. Him and his 14-year-old self did not win the whole thing. They finished third that year, actually.
By the way, when I was 14, I still probably couldn't have done well at the Little League World Series.
But back to Almonte. This kid was throwing 76 miles an hour, right, as a 14-year-old. Carving
with that short mound, it's actually 102, faster.
102 miles an hour. Yeah. So they called him the Little Randy Johnson. He got the keys to New York City, and then he went on. What did he do? He went on to play high school ball, won some high school championships, and then he married a woman in her 30s when he turned 20.
Did he go to college?
He went to junior college in Western Oklahoma, where he hit 472 with 18 home runs 1 year, and then he wound up playing some independent ball in Southern Illinois, and now he's a coach. The latest on him was he's a Cardinal Hayes coach in high school in New York.
So he never went to full college, never made it to the pros.
No, but his coach, like Ronnie Polino, did get suspended from play for having the bad players, and his dad did get arrested for forging the documents of him not being 12.
Why isn't that a 30 for 30?
It's got to be.
It has to be.
Like, what are they doing?
That's incredible.
But the impressive thing there is, like you said, look at what this Gavin Weir kid is doing. It's unreal. Like, and he's like legit 12 years old.
But like, when they get to this, like, I know they can't change the mound distance, but that kid looks like 5'10 or whatever, and he's throwing gas, and these little kids frightened in their shoes. But that's awesome. All right, man, any final closing comments here?
I know the one kid who got a hit off of him.
Seriously, that guy deserves Jim Dandy.
He's walking around with swag right now.
They asked him who got the hit off him, and he never answered the question. He was a typical professional ball player. Yeah. He glazed around the answer. It was really great. Funny.
All right, Matt, it's great to have you. Obviously, you're close by. We'll do it again.
Yeah, man.
Matt Sorois, John Senecal, Brian Shackman. This has been episode 44 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You want to do your little where you can see us and watch us stuff?
Check us out on Facebook. Podcast Fan Base, and on Twitter, Fan Base Podcast.
We gotta change that.
I know. Flip flop. I think I actually just said it wrong.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.